You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Some scientists disagree with the idea that a killer comet struck the Earth 12,800 years ago. One of them is physicist and space objects expert Dr. Mark Boslow. He is a technical advisor for Sandia National Laboratories and adjunct professor at the University of New Mexico. Mark calls for planetary defense, but he doesn't like this hypothesis of a younger Dryas impact. From Albuquerque, New Mexico, Mark Boslow, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
You've been on a lot of great programs. I have seen you myself on TV, and I know you as a pioneer of the Airbuster space rocks idea that can cause significant damage, but they're not like age-ending catastrophes. Should we worry less about big asteroids and more about smaller space debris?
Well, I've argued that we should, and I should back up. I am now retired from Sandia Labs. I retired last June, and I'm sorry, I probably haven't updated everything on the web yet. But most of this work I did when I was a staff member at Sandia. I'm now at University of New Mexico.
Fair enough. And about the idea of the big asteroids, I mean, we've seen Bruce Willis on the screen trying to fight them off with nuclear weapons. But what happens when these smaller bits hit the Earth? Why should we be concerned?
Well, there's really a couple reasons why I have argued that most of the risk, at least half of the risk, is in these small ones. One is we've discovered most of the big ones that are on Earth-crossing orbits that have the potential to hit the Earth, the really big catastrophic ones. We've discovered something like 90% of those since the effort began to find them about 20 years ago. The second reason is that my models and the models of others now show that small asteroids create an airburst that's actually more damaging than an equivalent explosion from a nuclear weapon. And in the past, most of our estimate for risk came from damage from the nuclear weapons effects literature. So we've kind of updated that in the last 10 or 15 years.
So you're one of the big names in that field, and yet you're a leading critic of the Younger Dryas impact event hypothesis. From your perspective, what are some of the problems with that idea?
Well, I guess my first problem is I don't know exactly what the hypothesis is, because each one of their papers seems to state it somewhat differently. Their original paper was the one that Firestone was the lead author of. That was in 2007. And at that point, they were pretty loose with their definition of the hypothesis. And they said, well, it was a comet or a broken comet or asteroid that either exploded in the atmosphere or in space or hit an ice sheet. And so they didn't really differentiate among these various hypotheses, and they kind of had the bases covered. And since then, it seems to have evolved quite a bit. And they don't always state it in the same terms.
Dr. Nicholas Pinter and others published a requiem for the Younger Dryas impact hypothesis, and a year later you published another paper with arguments and evidence against it. What do you now make of the two new papers published by the same group in the Journal of Geology?
Well, I have to say I spent some time last night and this morning reading those, and I mostly focused on the areas where my expertise lies, that is impact physics and the physics of airbursts. And to me, there's really nothing new. In fact, a lot of it just either ignores or misrepresents our criticisms. And so I didn't find them to add much, if anything, to their argument.
Our guest Joanne Ballard told us the Younger Dryas impact hypothesis has been evolving, as you say. And at one point, they seemed to suggest a breakup of a space rock then started giant fires on several continents at the same time. Do you think that is possible or likely?
Well, it doesn't really make sense to me, and I and a lot of others have questioned the details of how that could work, how something could break up with just the exquisite timing for all the pieces to hit the Earth, but widely separated enough that they cause fires but do not cause impact craters. There's no impact crater from this event. And so it would have to have broken up just before hitting the Earth, but before it could spread out enough that, you know, only a few of the objects would hit the Earth. And the timing would have to be perfect. And that just, to me, kind of adds to the low, extremely low probability of what they're suggesting happened.
At least two of the co-authors of these new papers are not scientists, as far as I can tell. One is listed in various places as Dr. Alan West or as geophysicist Alan West, but I can't find support for either of those titles. I asked Alan West for an interview. He declined. Is Alan West's lack of credentials important for assessing the samples that he gathered for some of the earlier research?
Well, I have to say, in science, trust really matters, and reputation really matters. Ronald Reagan used to say, trust but verify, and that actually was a Russian proverb. And I think I'd kind of turn it around, and I'd say something like, verify before you trust. And I don't have any verified information about Alan West. I know he's been under intense scrutiny, and there was an article by science reporter Rex Dalton a few years ago talking about his role in this, and pointing out that he didn't have any background, or at least there was no evidence for a background. And I haven't seen any background that he's actually got the training or experience to do what he contributes to these papers.
Another co-author of the two new papers is George Howard. According to his online profile, Mr. Howard has a BA in political science from the University of North Carolina. George Howard has a blog called The Cosmic Tusk, and that was recommended to listeners by our guest, Joanne Ballard. The Cosmic Tusk blog has a list of articles slamming you, Mark Boslaw. How did you develop that special relationship?
Yeah, that's sort of outside the way normal science is done. I mean, we do like to have our vigorous debates at scientific conferences. Usually they don't get personal. I don't try to get bogged down in any kind of personal insult type debate. Some people, I think, find it insulting when you criticize the science, and I think George may be one of those.
Now, Mark Boslaw, you have a record of going after anti-science and climate denial. How does this Younger Dryas impact hypothesis get used by climate deniers like Anthony Watt?
Well, I know he's run a few articles about it. I don't know what his position. I don't read his blog, or I rarely look at it.
Really? I'm surprised.
But I know, so Wally Broker, who actually is probably one of the most famous living earth scientists, he's at Columbia University, and he was quoted in that Rex Dalton story saying, you know, this whole controversy with Alan West's background says it does feed the distrust of science. Those who don't believe in human-produced global warming grab onto it. And Wally is actually the guy who coined the term global warming back in his 1975 paper, in which he predicted a lot of what we've now experienced.
I think what the deniers want to do is to say, well, look, these things aren't part of any natural cycle. We can't look at the ice ages and changing climates because, after all, it was just caused by a rock from space, and that's more convenient for them.
Well, I think Wally's right. They tend to grab onto anything, whether there's merit to it or not.
Are you aware of any evidence of a crater showing the impact claimed? And if not, could the crater have escaped our notice, say hidden in the ocean or by landing on a deep ice field like the Laurentide ice sheet?
You know, I looked at that problem. They had suggested a 4-kilometer diameter object hitting the Laurentide ice sheet. And, you know, if it were that big, it would have punched right through and made a big hole in a bedrock. And there's nothing like that. If it was a 4-kilometer diameter object that broke up into a bunch of pieces, well, it's extremely unlikely that they'd all hit the Laurentide ice sheet. And a crater that young and that big, that recent, it wouldn't have subducted. There would be very little erosion. I mean, it would literally still be steaming. The tiny little meteor crater, Arizona, is 50,000 years old, not just 12,000, but, you know, something like a factor of four older, and it looks fresh. It looks brand new, and it's tiny. I mean, it's many orders of magnitude smaller than what they're suggesting here. And likewise, there's an impact structure. It's buried, and it took a while to be discovered after the Cretaceous Paleogene boundary event was first proposed in 1980. But it's huge. It's a monster, and it's something like 500 times older, if I did that right in my head that fast. It's 65 million years old, 66 million years old.
You know, the media loves stories of comets and asteroids striking the Earth and causing havoc. Do you think that fascination helps keep this younger Dryas impact hypothesis going?
I do. I mean, there's a natural human fascination, and that's good. I mean, anything that keeps people interested in science and in the sky and in astronomy, in my opinion, is a good thing. But I think both, you know, your profession in journalism and my profession in science, we have to keep everything a little bit reined in and grounded. And in fact, that is one of the things I do as chair of the Asteroid Day expert panel. So we formed this organization called Asteroid Day. And part of the purpose of this panel we set up is to get experts to make sure that everything we say, everything that goes out is from Asteroid Day, the organization has a press release or as an answer to someone's question, is scientifically correct and defensible. So I think that's really important. And a lot of what we find ourselves doing is chasing down some of these clickbait stories about the next asteroid that's going to destroy the Earth. And those seem to appear with regular frequency.
Yeah, the planet Nibiru, I think it is going to come and get us. Well, it was going to come and get us, and then the dates come and pass. You know?
I think that one may have come and gone.
Yeah. You are listening to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. My guest is Dr. Mark Boslow, an expert in planetary defense against objects from outer space. And that's the next thing I want to talk to you about, Mark. Are the big institutions like NASA or the EU space program, can they reliably warn us if something from outer space is going to hit us?
Well, I think if anything really big, we would have advance warning. Maybe not as much as we would like. I mean, the problem is really big things that would be big enough to take out an entire continent, say, we would have to employ some kind of planetary defense scheme and actually deflect it. I mean, that would be what everyone would hope. But that is going to take something like a decade of lead time. And we don't have a guarantee with our current resources that we would find something with that much time. The smaller ones, the Tunguska-sized or meteor crater-sized events, there's a really good chance we wouldn't see those at all. They may be coming on an orbit. They may be in an orbit that would bring them in from the direction of the sun, and we wouldn't see them at all. We would get zero warning, just like the Chelyabinsk event of February 2013.
Well, it used to be that humans were not very concentrated. They were spread all over the place. But now we have mega cities. I think that increases the chance that one of these things could strike in a heavily populated area.
Well, and it did, and Chelyabinsk did do that. Fortunately, it was only roughly 20 meters in diameter. It was about a half a megaton explosion, and it was 40 kilometers to the south of the city where that energy, you know, was transferred to the atmosphere, creating this big explosion. But it came in at a shallow angle, which spread its energy out over a larger area, so more people experienced it, but the shockwave was actually less intense. And nobody was killed. And that could happen again. But we estimate that an event of that size happens somewhere on Earth roughly once every 50 years. The next one could hit a city. Again, the probability of that is low. I mean, people are concentrated. But cities, you know, if you look at the map of the Earth, cities don't cover that much of a percentage of the Earth's surface.
And it could always just hit the ocean anyway.
Could hit the ocean. Yep, and there's also we also have a concern of tsunami, airburst generated tsunami, and I've worked with tsunami modelers to try to estimate how bad that would be. Right now, I don't think we've come to a full consensus. There are a lot of people that I think have come to dismiss that idea. I'm not so sure it should be dismissed yet. I think there's still work to be done.
On a personal note, Mark, you turned a private property fight with off-roaders in Colorado into an important new argument, I think, in climate, and that is, talk to us about the right to radiate.
Okay, well, I did blog about that, and it's an idea I've had for some time. And really, it's kind of a libertarian argument. And I know it's funny because a lot of the people who reject the science of climate change don't reject it on the basis of science. They reject it on the basis of what they want to believe. And I think a lot of libertarians or you know, more conservative people with libertarian ideas, their values want to reject it because it would require some kind of government intervention, and they tend to be sort of against government regulations. So my idea is to kind of get around that libertarian resistance by saying, geez, you know, we have private property rights, and the way we actually cool ourselves, whether it's our private property or the earth, is we radiate heat into space. It goes up into space, and some fraction of it just keeps going and disappears, and that keeps us cooled off like a cooling fin. But greenhouse gas pollution gets in the way. It absorbs that radiation, and it actually turns around and radiates it back at us. But we've established an easement. An easement is a right-of-way, and that's part of private property rights. So my argument is, well, you could sue the polluter for taking away your private property rights. And in the United States, that's a constitutional right. The Fifth Amendment says you cannot take private property for public use without due process. And there's been no due process in that. So it's kind of a constitutional argument that I think would appeal to libertarians if they thought it through.
And what are you working on these days, Mark?
Well, mostly proposals. I retired in June. I've been very busy. A lot of what I've been doing is public speaking and writing, spending time with my family. But I did spend the entire week last week writing a couple proposals for modeling airbursts on Mars and on Jupiter. And I hope at least one of those gets funded, because I'd like to work on this problem again, but more from a planetary science perspective and maybe a little bit less from a risk perspective. Planetary defense perspective.
Why would it matter if there's an airburst on Mars?
Oh, there is a mission to Mars that's going to be launched, hopefully in May, if everything goes right, the InSight mission, and it's going to have a seismic detector, a seismometer on it that would detect impacts and airbursts. And so I'm very interested in the way airbursts couple to seismic waves and actually couple through the air as very low frequency infrasound that might be detected by this instrument. And if we can model this correctly, and if everything is successful, we can get an estimate of the impact flux, how many of these small objects are out there hitting Mars.
I think that's a cool place to leave it. We've been talking with physicist Mark Boslow. He's a technical advisor. He was a technical advisor for Sandia National Laboratories before retiring. And he's an advocate for planetary defense, as you've heard. You can find more links and more discussion in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Mark, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.